intro.
Top of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Monday, March 23rd, 2020. The other thing that concerns me, I want to just read a little bit more from this article, like a sentence or two more. The other thing that concerns me for folks who know, you know, people who are sort of telling the future because they're not prophetic or psychic. They just read what bad guys write, you know, guys like Richie from Boston or James Corbett or whomever. I don't understand why we aren't all seeing the possibility, at least, of if retrofitting is going on, and with the rollout of 5G, whether it's these things in tandem or one or the other, the possibility of this technology being used to mimic symptoms that we're told, you know, is this stuff, so that maybe when society gets back to normal, you know, James Corbett posited that, for example, you know, the worst possible scenario is that we hear martial law, oh my goodness, but then troops roll out into the streets, the handing out food and a humanitarian relief mission, you know, only to normalize this kind of thing. And he said in one of his videos, do not normalize this. And I completely agree. But, you know, in that scenario, you normalize that, and then people get back to work and or school, and all of a sudden this technology is used to mimic, you know, cause the mimicking of symptoms that then we say, you know, we hear our, you know, it's blamed on this thing, and to do that in mass, and then people go out and get a vaccine that I don't think is going to help. I think that's probably going to be more problem. And New York Times actually ran a story speaking of that. Trump says coronavirus cure cannot be worse than the problem itself. So apparently I don't know what that means, but
talking about the chloroquine, not a vaccine. They're talking about the malaria drug, the chloroquine.
Right, but what he's saying specifically is not necessarily, you know, it's not that specifically. I think it hints more at what I'm talking about. Anyway, just real quick the soft kill solution, Ando Arike. This was March 2000 issue of Harper's Magazine. So just a couple, little bit more of that. The story, 60 Minutes piece he's talking about. The story was, in essence, a 12-minute Pentagon infomercial. What the protesters, quote-unquote, had come up against was the active denial system, the ADS, a weapon we were told that could change the rules of war and save huge numbers of lives in Iraq. We're never concerned about saving lives except when we are. Kind of like this nonsense now. If we're so concerned about saving lives, then what about all of those children with no voice? Isn't it? Hashtag their body, their choice. Anyway, active denial works like a giant open-air microwave oven, using a beam of electromagnetic radiation to heat the skin of its targets to 130 degrees and force anyone in its path to flee in pain, but without injury. Yeah, allegedly. Officials insist, making it one of the few weapons in military history to be promoted as harmless to its targets. The Pentagon claims that 11,000 tests on humans have resulted in but two cases of second-degree burns, a safety record that has put active denial at the forefront of an international arms development effort involving an astonishing range of technologies. Electrical weapons, that shock and stun, laser weapons that cause dizziness or temporary blindness, acoustic weapons that deafen and nauseate. So these kinds of things, you know, the less than lethal or what they call soft kill or active denial, that's kind of what I'm thinking of. You know, there is no disputing that the military has developed the technology, all of this digital technology. For those who don't understand that or believe that, go listen to George Friedman's Brain Bar Budapest talk. We've played that a few times where he says, you know, what was it? Is a global war coming? Is there a global war coming was the title of it. George Friedman at Brain Bar. And he says, you know, you don't know, you wonder, you know, is there a global war coming? There always is. It's always with you. I present to you the iPhone. And then he goes through background of technology, et cetera. Anyway, for those who don't know, maybe go look that up. So there's no denying that. There's no denying that Raytheon owns patents for technology that's being rolled out en masse now. It's military-grade technology, whether it's the ARPANET or, you know, the hardware and software that's been developed extensively by the military.
That microwave gun has two settings. There's stun and there's hot pocket.
Right.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, we saw the use of the acoustic system in Pittsburgh, wasn't it, for the some sort of globalist meeting in Pittsburgh years ago? Remember, they were zapping people on their front porches with acoustic, with sound cannon. They have all that.
Speaking of that, there's also the hearing voices component of that technology as well. So I could imagine if schools get retrofitted with this, you know, junior comes off of his psychotropics and at the same time starts hearing voices that tell him to do something bad, like they told Nicholas Cruz to take an Uber. Voices in my head told me to take an Uber. Anyway.
Strange. But, plus in Hong Kong, we saw with the protesters, you know, receiving text messages because they were recognized by, you know, facial recognition on AI facial recognition, and they received text messages saying, we know you're here. Are you sure you really want to be here? You know, we know where you live and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, with facial recognition, AI, and stuff like that, oh, well, you participate in a protest somewhere, and next thing you know, your ATM card doesn't work.
Well, you know. And speaking of that, you know, I heard James Corbett mention the surveillance aspect. You know, I forget which story it was I mentioned last week, but there were two or three that I saw together where, you know, using people's devices to sort of triangulate who's sick and then who they were in contact with, and then to sort of retroactively quarantine people, you know, ex post facto, if you want to call it that, is something that's been discussed. And where does that end? And something that, you know, James Corbett, I've heard Richie talk about it, other people have talked about it, but they say it goes back to, you know, 2009 legislation, or even back to when we first started hearing about the SARS stuff. I mean, I've talked about how after the SARS stuff, we got all of these statewide pandemic response plans and the nationwide plan, but it goes back further than that. And I'm going to talk about that again, I think, because people have no idea. I've mentioned a million times the Senate report 93-549 from the 93rd Congress back in 1973. So we'll talk more about that. Anyway, anything else, Glenn, before we continue on?
No, I'm just fortunate and grateful that I'm still able to work because of my work environment is minimal risk sort of thing. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah.
Nope. All right. Well, listen, Chris, I'll talk to you some other time. And remember, the chair is still by the door.
Yeah. Thanks, Glenn. Much appreciated. As always. I guess now is probably as good a time as any to touch on that. See, some of us were saying that this stuff that's been on the books for a long time, that the the Senate committee to terminate the national emergency was supposed to address, and that just sort of, you know, what it was, I would say, ostensibly the Senate committee to ostensibly terminate the national emergency. It was really just sort of a research project to gather up what powers, what superpowers the executive actually had. And according to the committee, at that time, back in 1973, there was no organization that had the computing power that the Air Force had that could do the kind of research that they could do. And so the Air Force was commissioned to help research this, to uncover, essentially, or to surface what federal provisions of law the president has or the executive has in times of national emergency. And they said it was thousands, actually, but they whittled it down to 470 provisions of federal law. And so what I would say is that people have no idea how far back this goes. Maybe we'll actually read, maybe I'll read from the foreword in the introduction of Senate Report 93-549. People talking about martial law and this and that. We have effectively been in that state really since the Lincoln era, according to the Senate report. And we've had declarations of national emergency. The Senate report from 1973 says most Americans have lived their whole lives for the last 40 years under a state of national emergency, which is effectively martial law for all intents and purposes. You know, March 9, 1933 was the date they went back to, but then they mentioned other states of declarations of national emergency made by other presidents, and they said, you know, as a, I forget exactly how they phrased it, but really it dates back to the Lincoln era and the Reconstruction, which I've talked about in other ways, even the military's, what is it, FM, oh gosh, which one is it? Stability Operations. I forget. FM 3-07 from 2008, speaking of predictive programming and what came next. And I've talked about how even that manual mentions, yeah, now you can't find it. Oops, page not found. Sorry, that went away. All right, so quickly, just a little background. Again, 1973, 93rd Congress, Senate Committee to Terminate the National Emergency. That's something you can find at archive.org. Senate Report 93-549. And I mean, so from the foreword, these proclamations give force to 470 provisions of federal law. These hundreds of statutes delegate to the president. Again, this is 1973. These hundreds of statutes delegate to the president extraordinary powers ordinarily exercised by Congress, which affect the lives of American citizens in a host of all-encompassing manners. This vast range of powers taken together confer enough authority to rule the country without reference to normal constitutional processes. Under the powers delegated by these statutes, the president may, : seize property, organize and control the means of production, seize commodities, assign military forces abroad, institute martial law, seize and control all transportation and communication, regulate the operation of private enterprise, restrict travel, and in a plethora of particular ways, control the lives of all American citizens. Now I ask you, in the last just couple of weeks, have we seen this play out? Where is this coming from? You know, we're hearing what I would call misdirection and, you know, obfuscation to sort of deflect away. But this is the reality. And some of us have been saying, this is the real issue. This is the real concern. This stuff doesn't go away. And, you know, the Fabians, whether it's Machiavelli or the Fabians or whomever, folks with an authoritarian or totalitarian bent will always, gravitate toward these things. And it's funny how they never come off the books. And I mentioned, you know, I've mentioned several times over the years how the Bush administration, Bush 2, released an updated version of National Emergency Powers, the CRS report 98-505, the update September 18, 2001, which was a week after you know what, which refers to Senate report 93-549 in a very disingenuous sort of fashion. Mentions the Senate Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency. But here's what it says. Here's what 98-505 says in reference to 93-549. Lastly, there are various standby laws which convey special emergency powers once the president formally declares a national emergency. And by the way, there are several on the books that have never been repealed already. Why do we have to declare more? So, various standby laws. What are they? In 1973, a Senate special committee studying emergency powers, gosh, that's disingenuous, don't you think? Published a compilation identifying some 470 provisions of federal law delegating to the executive extraordinary authority in time of national emergency. The vast majority of them are of the standby kind, dormant until activated by the president. However, formal procedures for invoking these authorities, accounting for their use and regulating their activation and applied, were established a while ago by the National Emergencies Act of 1976. See, that's what's really been going on. And so while these goofballs, you know, you get the National Security Act of 1947, the NME, the National Military Establishment, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and they immediately start cooking up ways to, you know, subvert America, essentially, and place us in a state of, well, lockdown like we're at now. And it takes a while, but here we are. So a little background, and then we'll move on. Like I said, people have no idea how far back this goes and how long bad guys have been working on scenarios like this. It's obviously a maxim of history that in times of emergency, all bets are off, so to speak, or all constitutions are off. Madison, you know, in particular, wrote about this concept for example, you know, standing military force with an overgrown executive will not be long safe companions, will not long be safe companions to liberty. The means of defense against foreign danger have always been the instruments of tyranny at home. Donald Trump says he's a wartime president now. And all of this emergency stuff, it's a maxim of history. That's why guys like Madison warned us. Norman Dodd, speaking of how far back it goes in the contemporary iteration, remember Norman Dodd's disclosure to J. Edward Griffin back in 1982, how he talked about, you know, during my tenure at a high-placed New York bank, a Morgan bank, he said, I was told by these guys who ran the bank that they had engineered a set of circumstances to move us away from pre-World War I life forever, and that they had introduced a series of controversies or conflicts that would be irreconcilable. For what purpose? For this. I'll finish on that and we'll move on. Go back to the phone. Stick around. Be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Feel it's their appointed duty. They keep trying to tell me, all you want to do is use me. But my answer, on using me until you use me up, until you use me up, my brother.
Welcome back. Holy cow, we lost Joan Vian too soon. Most definitely. And, you know, Mario Draghi, I read his name this morning. Just like Mario Draghi said. Just like Joan Vian said. Remember when Joan Vian said, you know, when central banks rule the world and vampires do what vampires do, and what could possibly go wrong, you know? Why would we be naive enough to think that people who engineered the problem, speaking of Prince Charles, you know, he literally admits, you know, this mess that we've engineered ourselves into. Well, that's ironic. Now you're going to think you're going to engineer yourself out of it? Why would we think? So the Fed just gave itself, you know, more than $1 trillion in cash, got, you know, big multinational corporations and institutions are retracting. They're all hoarding cash. What's that going to do to the market? Historically, speaking of 100 years ago, you know, the panic of 1907 and those kinds of moments, what does it do when there's a huge retraction, when there's a panic and people, you know, you can't go down and withdraw more than, you know, whatever Federal Reserve units, but these institutions are hoarding cash, including the Federal Reserve, which, you know, just made a couple of few more line entries, you know, like Glenn Beck said, $500 billion in one night, for instance. So that the Fed can go out and, you know, the Fed is poised to, you know, buy assets. Well, isn't that nice? Now that there's a fire sale, how kind. So they issued themselves a, you know, a line item to be able to, you know, they just adjusted their ledger entry to go out and steal more assets in a fire sale that they've been instrumental in creating. And at the same time, they're willing to, you know what, we'll buy these assets from you at fire sale prices. And we're so great, we will loan you money. We'll loan you at interest, you know, money so that we can steal the rest later. And by the way, small businesses, you guys are on the hook for, you know, the recovery effort. Whether or not, I mean, and this is a broad brush approach, it's a blanket approach, whether or not your state or county or municipality has a problem or not. What could possibly go wrong? So why would anyone think that vampires are going to, vampires do what vampires do. And, you know, in that video, David Icke says, you know, it's a cult. They're a cult. And I call it the death cult. It's pretty obvious they're obsessed with death, except in moments like this where they can say, you know, we have to save lives at all costs. Really? Well, then what about all those children whose lives deserve saving? Those unborn children, what about them? Are we really that concerned about life, or are we just using that as a stick to beat people over the head? I want to play that clip of Norman Dodd, but just my remarks, we'll play it in the next segment. But real quick, Norman Dodd intimated that, you know, he heard the same thing, essentially. This is a guy who heard the same thing at the high-level financial institution that he spent time with, and then they discovered the same thing through the Reese Committee investigation that he had heard previously. And I dare say that's why he was telling those two stories in tandem. His personal firsthand account and then Catherine Casey's discovery at the Carnegie Endowment for so-called international peace, actually trying to steer America into a perpetual state of war. Why? Because a state of crisis and national emergency is the most effective means to subvert the people, essentially. So Norman Dodd mentioned that, you know, experience, high-level New York bank, Morgan Bank. He was told that these guys were engineering a perpetual state of crisis in America, so to never return to pre-World War I life in America, you know, peacetime. And then you look at what the Reese Committee uncovered, and then you connect that with what the Senate Committee to Terminate the National Emergency uncovered, and their CRS Report 93-549, which the Bush 2 administration said, hey, you have these special powers, and on and on. See what I'm saying? It's an unbroken series. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
When your doctor tells you you have bad cholesterol or blockages in the arteries, what do you do? When diet and exercise is not enough, we try medications and hope for the best. For the last two decades, I have been telling people about a natural method to help solve these problems and more. Extendovite can help maintain cardiovascular health and lower blood lipid levels in adults. The seven herbs in Extendovite are known to work together synergistically to get the results we hope for. There are many testimonials on Extendovite's effect on circulatory-related ailments. Get Extendovite today to start your journey back to a healthier life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or see us on amazon.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
Broadcasting Network, late night premier show of Red Pill Hardcore is hosted by activists that want to hear from you, the listeners, so that you can get involved in the activism. Please call in at 800-313-9443 at 10 p.m. to enter the discussion. To book yourself as a guest, call our studio at 202-657-5715 or contact RBN staff. Remember, keep it real and take the Red Pill.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back. Fox News yesterday, de Blasio, if Trump does not act on coronavirus outbreak, people will die. See, suddenly we're concerned about lives. The truth is, de Blasio said it's only getting worse. Only getting worse, you know, like he's psychic. He blamed Trump for the military being kept on the sidelines. This is horrifying. And the other propaganda stuff, like New Jersey mayor stresses social distancing after video shows youth defying police. Of course, we have that. And there was what was the other one? people at the beach again. How dare they? Crowds pack California beaches despite shelter-in-place order, which I think is fantastic. You know, getting back to what Glenn and I were talking about, I mean, I hope that we don't fall prey to the nonsense, really. Crowds packed California beaches despite shelter-in-place order. And, you know, I would expect the heavy hand like what we've seen in, what was it, Cincinnati already? You know, and last but not least, where was that? Oh, yeah, Richie, speaking of Boston, boston.com. Four maps predicting the snowfall in Massachusetts from Monday's storm. You know, Richie was saying, keep an eye on the weather, and many of us have been kind of, you know, there's been a reprieve, it seems. People have noted that the sky's been clearer. You know, there were actual clouds in the sky yesterday, where I am, which I thought was astonishing. So keep an eye on the what are the odds that at the worst possible moment we get the worst storm on record? What do you bet that'll start happening? So anyway, back to the Norman Dodd soundbite. I want to play a little bit of this Norman Dodd talking about what we're dealing with right now that has been underway or in the works for more than 100 years. So if we're ready with that, this is, he's talking about being invited to look into the records at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace as part of the Reese Committee's investigation. So that's sort of the background. And then he mentions Catherine Casey. Anyway, I'll let him speak for himself. Go ahead, please.
Also a young man, and I guessed that probably they'd never read the minutes themselves. And so I said I had somebody, I would take it. I would accept their offer. And I went back to Washington, and I selected the member of my staff who was on my staff, having been a practicing attorney in Washington, but she was on my staff to see to it that I didn't break any congressional procedures or rules, in addition to which she was unsympathetic to the purpose of the investigation. She was level-headed and a very reasonably brilliant, capable lady. And her attitude toward the investigation was, what could possibly be wrong with foundations? They do so much good. Well, in the face of that sincere conviction of Catherine's, I went out of my way not to prejudice her in any way. But I did explain to her that she couldn't possibly cover 50 years of handwritten minutes in 2 weeks. So she would have to do what we call spot reading. And I blocked out certain periods of time to concentrate on. And off she went to New York. She came back at the end of 2 weeks with the following in the way of on dictaphone belts. We are now at the year 1908, which was the year that the Carnegie began operations. And in that year, the trustees, meeting for the first time, raise a specific question, which they discuss throughout the balance of the year in a very learned fashion. And the question is there any means known more effective than war, assuming you wish to alter the life of an entire people? And they conclude that no more effective means than war to that end is known to humanity. So then in 1909 they raise the second question and discuss it, namely, how do we involve the United States in a war? Well, I doubt at that time if there was any subject more removed from the thinking of most of the people of this country than its involvement in a war. There were intermittent shows in the Balkans, but I doubt very much if many people even knew where the Balkans were. Then finally, they answer that question as follows. We must control the State Department. And then that very naturally raises the question of how do we do that? And they answer it by saying, we must take over and control the diplomatic machinery of this country. And finally, they resolve to aim at that as an objective. Then time passes, and we are eventually in a war, which would have been World War I. And at that time, they record on their minutes a shocking report in which they dispatched to President Wilson a telegram cautioning him to see that the war does not end too quickly. And finally, of course, we are, the war is over. At that time, their interest shifts over to preventing what they call a reversion of life in the United States to what it was prior to 1914 when World War I broke out. And they arrive at that point, they come to the conclusion that to prevent a reversion, we must control education in the United States. And they realize that that's a pretty big task. So it's to them, it is too big for them alone, so they approach the Rockefeller Foundation with the suggestion that that portion of education which is could be considered domestic be handled by the Rockefeller Foundation, and that portion which is international should be handled by the endowment. And they then decide that the key to the success of these two operations lay in an alteration of the teaching of American history. So they approach four of the then most prominent teachers of American history in the country, people like Charles and Mary Byrd, and their suggestion to them is, will they alter the manner in which they present this subject, and they get turned down flat. So they then decide that it is necessary for them to do, as they say, build our own stable of historians. And then they approach the Guggenheim Foundation, which specializes in fellowships, and say, when we find young men in the process of studying for doctorates in the field of American history, and we feel that they are the right caliber, will you grant them fellowships on our say-so? And the answer is yes. So under that condition, eventually they assemble 20, and they take this 20 potential teachers of American history to London, and there they're briefed into what is expected of them when, as and if, they secure appointments in keeping with the doctorates they will have earned.
So that's a little bit of an excerpt. And so you go down that list, irrevocably alter life in America was the original goal, or that was part of the main goal, was the alteration that was their vision into this dystopia. You know, I mean, by, what was it, 1927, you know, you have Metropolis, the film, and, you know, all kinds of, I mean, there were pretty unabashed in the casting of the vision early on. But, you know, by means of a perpetual state of war, did we see that throughout the 20th century? And, you know, every generation gets their thing, right? Every 10 years or so, we get a thing. don't we? And it's pretty much an unbroken series of conflicts. And what have we learned from all of that? Smedley Butler told us that war is a racket. Donald Trump is a wartime president. Great. Whether he means it genuinely or not, it's something that should be an odious concept in the minds of Americans. And yet somehow that's been normalized, it seems. Capture the State Department. Seeing that, and how can you believe a guy, former CIA chief, who brags about lying? What's the cadet motto? Lie, cheat, steal, or what is it? Tolerate those who do. And CIA, lie, cheat. We have entire training programs. It's funny, apparently. The State Department has long been captured, long been a CIA president's foreign policy advisor's mouthpiece. It's like the, megaphone for those kinds of talking points. Control diplomatic machinery, yes. Control education to prevent reversion, yes. Check, 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 check. Alter teaching of U.S. history in particular, yes. Build our own stable of historians. Whenever you hear fellow, whenever I hear fellow, this is exactly what I think of. Again, it's just grates on my nerves. Fellows. And so this is why, when you really understand what the Reese Committee uncovered back in the 50s, it was essentially all over but the crying, all of this machinery that had been brought to bear, the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars already at that time, that had been dedicated to the irrevocable alteration of life in America. And here we are. Things could go back if, people only knew. At some point, we'll get back to Bill Gates, I think, because that's an interesting discussion. There was a Time magazine article back in 2001, June 2001, In Search of the Real Bill Gates. Articles like that. He's a psychopath. He's a corporate terrorist. A corporate assassin. Well, but now he's the darling. And everything that you see, like every piece of what has happened recently apparently has been coordinated effectively by the continuation of the Rockefeller Foundation that Norman Dodd was just talking about. And the Gates Foundation openly brags at times about that. They're continuing the Rockefeller work, which was essentially a eugenics operation. Really, that's one of the main objectives, to get rid of all of these excess people, as Bill Gates said in that Box interview. All right, let's go back to the phones for the moment. Paul in New Jersey.
Hello, Chris.
Paul.
What's going on?
Good afternoon. Is it afternoon now?
Yeah. Hey, concerning the way they're fighting this epidemic, let's be honest. First of all, in the old days, state and local authorities had the right to quarantine sick citizens. Okay, that's well established. Also, as we know, in the yellow fever epidemic in 1793, at the time George Washington was president, nobody thought anything about the fact that, the state of New York and other states basically locked out Pennsylvania and would have armed men blocking the roads of refugees fleeing the crisis in Philadelphia. So that's established, that's accepted, and that is the way things should be. In other words, local health authorities have very strong powers to force quarantine the sick and basically close off whole sections of travelers and the flow of commerce, et cetera. So that's established.
It's also an established fact of history that guys like Thomas Jefferson wrote about, that when you start stacking people up on top of each other in these inner city places, he said, if we start doing that here, then like the people in London, we'll be sick all the time. And so eugenicists love to do that. They love to stack people up on top of each other. And so I was actually, speaking of that kind of stuff, I was thinking of you and wondering, are you spending your time in the city or in the country?
And I'll tell you after the break.
Right on. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
So, Paul, in New Jersey, where are you choosing to spend your time?
Oh, well, I do have a very, you know, rural place in upstate New York, but I don't want to go up there and freeze, so I'm in my suburban, ranch house right now. And I have a garden here, and we've got our space, and I'm keeping my social distance, and I'm not essential services, my profession, so I'm off work right now, and I've actually been enjoying it. It's been very pleasant, But remember, though, here's part of the problem. In the old days, they would quarantine the sick people, not the healthy people. And that's the problem with the way they're doing this today. But then again, part of the problem is who's to determine who's sick and who's not. And the other thing is, in a sense, I could argue that we could, and that's up for the local communities and states, just to mandate like wearing some kind of mouth cover when you're in proximity of strangers. You know, if you're going to get within 6 feet of other people, then you should kind of show the common courtesy, putting on some kind of mask or cover to your mouth, among others. And that could be, again, that should all be handled by the state and local authorities. Now, one last note, before the break, because I know it's coming up, is, a lot of people are out there saying, and the globalist types, and they're promoting, oh, this is the time to get rid of cash, and we should get rid of cash. Now, the people on the Patriot right, they need to get out there and hammer away and say, wait a minute, silver is hygienic currency. If anything, and if you think of the average cost of an ounce of silver, it's about $20. So most people who shop, generally you're going to spend maybe several hundred dollars. At a total of what, you're going to carry maybe a pound of silver with you, which isn't that much weight, really. And it can actually be gold. Gold will be pretty hygienic, too, but silver is even more so. And so the point is, we need to get out there and say, wait a minute, this is the time to go to the hygienic currency of the past.
Yeah.
And those are precious metals, because germs don't survive well on silver surfaces. And actually, this is a great time, too, where local states and all the rest of this is start to promote using silver fixtures and doorknobs and other things that people touch in public. And that should almost be promoted through, again, local legislation and through local boards of health.
Yeah, and also providing that we don't go, shoot and kill people in other countries to acquire it.
Exactly. Okay. Have a good day.
There's always that issue.
Yeah. All right, Chris.
Thanks, Paul. Very much. That's an excellent point. And let's stop saying we're going to buy money, because, isn't, according to our Constitution, isn't that stuff money? That's what I thought. Not this specious currency that is redeemable for nothing. Thomas Jefferson was right. Paper is poverty. It's the ghost of money and not money itself. These guys, through sleight of hand, like to swap the ghost of money for real assets. Wish that we got wise to that in America, too. Third hour coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. September 2018. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I've been using Extendivite for many years now. May 2018. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. March 2018. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. February 2018. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.